Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. What you are about to hear was originally recorded in 2010 as research for my book, Public Speaking Superpowers. After going through all this content, I've decided to release these 80-plus recordings as a bi-weekly podcast. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence. Today, I'm speaking with E.G. Sebastian. E.G. started his career in management in 1990 as a general manager and 49% owner of a Chinese-Hungarian export-import company. Later, he moved on to a now more than 15-year career as a speaker and leadership development coach. E.G. is the past area governor for two consecutive years of Toastmasters International and the author of Communication Skills Magic, Step-by-Step Strategies for Improving Your Personal and Professional Relationships. He speaks six languages and presents in four of them, English, Spanish, Hungarian, and Romanian. Welcome to Public Speaking Superpowers, E.G.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Just so listeners can get a feel for your unique expertise, could you tell us a little about your journey to success in public speaking?
Wow. I was 23 years old when I went to a three-day intensive seminar. It was a self-improvement seminar. It was something from morning 9 o'clock till evening 7 o'clock. And as I was in that seminar, I was thinking, I want to spend my life doing what this guy is doing. I mean, it was just mesmerizing. The way he was holding the audience captive, and it affected the rest of my life. Actually, I quit my job after that seminar and I started my business. In only 3 years, I became super successful. Except, yes, I wanted to be like that guy, but I had a phobia of speaking. Really, really bad phobia. Anytime I had to stand up to speak, even in a small crowd, like 10, 15 people, any size crowd, if I had to speak for 30 seconds, my knees would start shaking. I would have a terrible, terrible stomach cramp. I would feel like everybody could see my heart beating through my jacket or my shirt, whatever I would wear. And I would feel like I could collapse in any moment. And only after about 30 seconds or a minute, my throat would feel really funny. And I would break down literally and cry.
Oh, my tears
would start flowing. Oh, yeah. And this is just the short version of what I was going through. It was really, really horrible. And I had to take public speaking in college. And the first speech, it was, I believe, 2 minutes. And I had to stop about three or four times during my speech and just breathe and think. I was psyching myself. I was saying, nobody knows that I'm so scared. Nobody knows that I'm so scared. Just relax, just relax. I was taking some deep breaths. I was just looking down, pretending that I was thinking. And those 2 minutes of edit, you know, once I passed that, I was like, okay, whew, I was so proud of myself. That's where I come from. And in a few years, I got to a place where I became a paid speaker. But it was a exciting journey. And before I took speech classes in college, actually, I thought I could never, never be a speaker. It was a dream like, I want to fly, or I want to be like Superman, you know.
Right.
I want to be a speaker. So it was the same kind of a dream. I knew that I could never be a speaker.
So how did you overcome that?
Well, those college classes helped me, and quote-unquote, God's hand helped a little bit because I had A's in all my classes. I was taking 7-8 classes a semester. I was a full-time student. I started college at 27, by the way. And I had A's or B-plus in most of my classes. And in my speech class, I had A's and B's, but I missed my video self-analysis. My last assignment was a video self-analysis. I was helping my parents with some issues and some legal problems, and I forgot about the video self-analysis. So I got a C in speech. I never had a C in college, so I didn't know if I could retake it. I asked if I could retake the class, and they said, yeah, no problem. Of course you can retake it. So I took the class again. Now, when I went in for the second time in the same class and I saw everybody so scared, I felt so confident. And in my very free speech that I gave in that semester, everybody was laughing and they enjoyed my speech. And I thought, wow, this is the coolest thing in the world. I can do this. And I took all the advanced classes I took. When I ran out of speech classes, I took poetry. I never liked poetry, but I just wanted more speech classes. I fell so in love with it that I just wanted to take every semester, I wanted to take more speech classes. So I took poetry, advanced poetry, everything that was provided in speech. And then everybody was telling me, you need to join Toastmasters if you want to be a speaker. And I was thinking, why would I join Toastmasters? It sounded like an organization where all the drunk people practice to give a toast.
It is an odd name.
Yeah, and you know, I was telling somebody about it, and they said, oh, I thought it was a place where people learn to make the perfect breakfast toast. But anyway, after lots of people telling me about it, I went and checked out the meeting, and about 30 minutes in the meeting, I thought, I will never come back here. I mean, people were stiff and serious. I'm a goofy guy. I like to have fun. And these people were stiff and serious, and Mr. Toastmaster, Madam Toastmaster, and this master and that master, and I was like, oh, I will never come back here. But then David Zanon stood up and he gave a speech. And that speech was motivational, inspirational. It had fire, it had humor. I was laughing, I was crying. I said, wow, I want to be able to speak like David. I'm coming back. So now I'm a Toastmaster for more than 7 years. I've been area governor for a couple of years. I've been president for 5 years. Right now I'm VP of public relations. I got in the newspaper a couple of times, and so I'm a Toastmaster fan completely by now.
Oh, yeah. I was a Toastmaster for many years. I got my CTM and actually halfway toward my ATM, although I understand they don't have those classifications like they used to, but it's a very good place to get your feet wet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm an advanced communicator, silver.
Okay. Well, not only did you start off being terrified of speaking, but you ended up not only becoming a successful public speaker, but in 4 languages. I mean, I don't know about other people, but even trying to talk to one other human being in a language that is not my given language is terrifying. I can't imagine standing in front of a group and speaking a language that's not my native tongue. How do you do that?
Well, yes, that's a great question, and it's a great question for Turi. As you can hear on my accent, I'm not a native English-speaking person. So actually, that was one of my main reasons why I thought that in the United States I could not become a speaker, because I have a stupid accent. I thought that was an impediment. I thought I could never become a speaker. So yes, many people think that if you have an accent or if you have to speak in a language other than yours, then that's a block. Then I saw Deepak Chopra. I mean, he has a much thicker accent than mine, and I went to lots of conferences, and I saw other speakers who had accents, and I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it too. I mean, that was my attitude all my life. When I saw somebody doing something, I thought, well, if he can do it, so can I. That's how I succeeded in business as well. I mean, I saw some people becoming successful. I said, well, if they can do it, so can I. For me, it's a passion. I love communicating with people from different cultures. I also know that people from different cultures appreciate it very much when somebody from another country or from another language try to speak in their language, in their native language. So I'm invited to speak at Hispanic events. They really appreciate it that I can speak in their language. And of course, I have mistakes. I have grammar mistakes, and I tell them right up front, hey, I speak fluent Spanish, but my grammar will be messed up, so feel free to correct me. I'm always open to learn. They sometimes correct me, and sometimes I even can't remember a word, and I will ask somebody who I know that speaks English. I'm like, how do you say? And they will help me out, and it's fun. I love languages.
You know, I've had a very similar experience. I've traveled around a bit. I grew up in Africa, and I live in the United States, but I've also visited England, which, although speaking English is a very different form of English from what you experience here in the States, and I've also visited Spain and Romania, and I found that if you make the effort, just the effort, to communicate with someone in their own language, they'll give you slack.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I traveled to many countries, and that was my experience, too. If I spoke in their language, I got free lunches and free drinks, you name it. I was invited to people's homes just because I spoke a few words. I spent lots of time in China, and I was very fortunate to be able to visit many people. I was very curious to see how people really live. I didn't want to see the hotel. I wanted to see the inside of people's homes, and I was very fortunate to visit many people. And that was because I took the effort to learn some Chinese.
Right. My next question, I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be, but I'm going to ask it anyway, and that is, do you believe that public speaking is a learned skill or something you're born being able to do, and why?
Public speaking is one of the most unnatural things. I don't think that anybody is born to do it. I think very few people feel comfortable with public speaking right from the beginning. And even those who feel comfortable, they will not do it right. Public speaking is like being a mechanic or like any skill. I mean, yes, you can pick up a hammer or you can try to fix a car. I can open the hood of my car and try to tinker with the engine, but I cannot fix it. Nobody is born a mechanic, and nobody is born as a public speaker either. Yes, my dad, he has a natural inclination towards fixing things, but he can just fix some things on my car. Same, some people, yes, they can naturally speak in public, but they do it, they will have a bunch of uhs and ums, or they don't involve the audience. It's a learned skill. I learned it. I hired a coach, I went to public speaking courses, and I know how to speak to my audience in a way that I keep them engaged, I make them laugh, I make them cry. I know exactly how to start, how to end, what to speak about, how not to overwhelm my audience with way too much information. And some people who say that they were born speakers, they want to give as much information as possible, and they overwhelm the audience. Too much information is not good, so you learn all this. There's not too much. I have articles on public speaking, 12 ways to improve your public speaking presence, and that kind of titles. It's simple, but if you don't know, then you don't know. But once you know and you practice it, then it gets easier. Of course, the best way to improve in public speaking is by doing it. Same like swimming. You can practice in front of the mirror. I used to be a swimming instructor, so I taught my students first outside of the water. I taught them the movements.
Right.
But after a while, we have to get in the water and do it. And that's how it is with public speaking, too. You learn the principles, and then you hop in it and do it. Toastmasters is a great place where you can do it because you are surrounded with people who are just like you. They are terrified of public speaking, and they just want to improve. Or you can volunteer at a place. I volunteered at schools. I volunteered at social services organizations. I spoke at Rotary clubs. I spoke at conferences for free in the beginning. I mean, you name it. Anywhere they asked me to go to speak, I just kept on going. And the first, let's say, maybe 30 to 50 times before each presentation, even though with all those college classes and Toastmasters background, before my presentations, I still had that giant pain in my chest in the middle of the night. I would wake up, I felt like a truck stopped on my chest, and I couldn't breathe, and I had panic attacks. But the more I did it, the easier it got. So I'd say if somebody has a desire, they can overcome their fear of public speaking. And for some people, it's easier. I grew up in an environment where I was called stupid and retarded every day.
Oh, that's awful.
It is awful, and it affects your self-esteem a little bit. So for me to stand up in front of a crowd and speak, it was very, very terrifying. So I think that people who grow up in a little more normal environment, it's not as horrifying an experience to stand up in front of a crowd for the first time. But for me, it was a big challenge. But again, if you have the desire, it doesn't matter what happened to you or what fears you have. I don't think anybody had bigger phobia of public speaking than I did. And now I'm doing it a couple of times a week, and I enjoy it. I don't have fears before it. I'm not nervous before my presentations. I love it. Most speakers say that the fear of public speaking never goes away, that you're always still a little nervous before them. I have the feeling of anticipation before each of my presentations. And if I have to give a keynote, yes, I will still be nervous before it, because the keynote has to be very impressive and all that. So it's more formal. So yes, I'm a little nervous before keynotes, but I do workshops, 1 day and 2 day workshops, and zero fear or nervousness. I have anticipation. I can't wait to get in front of the crowd, because each time I do it, I get a sense of pleasure. People enjoy what I'm doing. They get lots of aha moments. They are laughing. They are enjoying themselves. And for me, it's fun. I'm getting paid to have fun. It's the most wonderful lifestyle.
Wonderful. Now, imagine that you are a public speaking superhero. What do you believe would be your main superpowers?
As a paid speaker?
As a public speaker. So it's basically, what do you think are your strengths as a speaker?
I don't think I can put my finger on one, but I will have to mention at least two superpowers, because I'm a special super speaker. I have special powers. One is the ability to read and connect with my audience. So I can read their mood, and I can modify my pace and my delivery in a way to connect with them. And my second one is my sense of humor. And sense of humor, I don't prepare jokes. I do not tell jokes in my workshops. Some of it is learned. I read comedy books. I mean, you just say, for example, a series of three things. Like, when you set a goal, you have to make sure that you take action. So I tell a story. Like, when I decided to go back to finish my high school, I said that the most important thing is to take action. So I decided to go back on that day. I decided to study hard and finish it, and I decided to go back and sleep out my hangover before I head out to the high school or something like that. So you make a series of three things, but you make the third one a silly one.
Right.
So there are things that you can learn to make it humorous, but that's one of my special powers, that I make every audience laugh. For me, it's natural. You don't have to be a comedian, and you don't have to be humorous to be a good public speaker. But in my case, that's one of my strengths. For other people, is that they are more inspirational or they can retain poems. I mean, I know speakers who recite poems out of the blue and quotes of hundreds of famous people. So I cannot do that. I wish I could. I don't know any poems, and I can't memorize quotes. I can memorize one, but...
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody has different strengths, and the main thing is to find your own strengths, capitalize on that. I realize that I'm a likable guy because of my sense of humor, so I capitalize on my sense of humor.
Right. And your public speaking really should be, I believe, an extension of who you are.
Yes, yes. You see, when I started, I wanted to be like Anthony Robbins. That was my goal. Well, when I started here in the United States, when I decided that, okay, this is possible, then he was my role model. And it took me more than a year, maybe even close to 2 years, to realize that I will never be like Anthony Robbins. I can be the best me that is possible. And he has his own style, and I found my style. And once I found my style, once I allowed myself to be me, that's when the panic attacks disappeared. Because in the beginning, I always wanted to come across as a speaker, as a professional speaker, as a motivational speaker. I had unrealistic expectations of myself. Once I allowed myself to be me, everything changed. The audience enjoyed my presentations better, and I enjoyed presenting better. I was more relaxed, and I had more fun. Before, it was like a tough job. I was thinking, you know, yes, I want to do this. I want to inspire, and also I can make lots of money. This is really great, but it was hard work. Once I allowed myself to be me, it was fun. I'm getting paid to have fun. It doesn't feel like work. I would do it for free every day if I didn't have to pay my bills.
There's a lot of jobs out there. I think people would say that too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I used to work in social work, and I said the same thing about that too. I mean, I loved it so much, I would have done it for free. Most of my life, I just did things that I would have done for free. We just have one life, and I believe that we should not waste it on jobs that we hate or just do it to pay the bills. I mean, there are so many jobs out there. We should find the one that we enjoy.
Most definitely. Now, I know in your answer to my last question, you've sort of touched on the answer to my next question, but what advice would you give someone if they wanted to develop the same superpowers you talked about, which were reading an audience and humor?
Well, the first one, reading the audience, is first of all, you have to become comfortable with pause. Many beginner speakers ramble. I don't know if that's the right term. They want to get through their presentation, so they just speak and speak, and they barely have time to take a breath. But it's very important that when you make a point, take a break. I coach people on public speaking, and I tell them, when you finish this part, count until two. And I put it down on their cheat sheets, because when they do a workshop, let's say a two-hour workshop or half-day workshop or even a full-day workshop, they have cheat sheets. And we put there, we highlight it in big yellow, count to two. And here I would say count to five. So let it sink in. And when you do that, when you learn to pause a little bit, then you have a chance also to watch the audience's reaction to what you just said. But if you just keep on going, you don't really have the time to, and some people can do both, like ramble on and watch the audience's reaction. But if you're like a train, you set on a track and you're going 300 miles an hour, it's hard to shift gears. But if you pause and you see your audience's reaction, and you see that they are kind of yawning or dozing away or they look bored, then you know that, okay, I have to bring in some humor, or I have to make them have an exercise, make them stand up, clap their hands or raise their hands in the air and say, oh, whatever, something silly. There are about, I don't know, 1 million books out there on interactive activities. My library is full of it. I have a whole row of books on activities. And shame on me, I bought some of them 2 times, and I have one that I bought 3 times. Because I would see it on Amazon. I would see it on Amazon.com, and I would say, wow, that's a great book. So I would buy it, and then I would see that when I would put it on the shelf, I'm like, oh, I have it twice already. But they are good gifts to give away to my coaching clients. So how I set up a workshop is right away I start with an interactive activity, and then I will speak for a couple of minutes, and there will be another activity. And then again I will speak for a few minutes, again, an activity. Now, this has multiple purposes. Number one, while they do the activity, I can cheat. I can see what I have to say next. So they think the activity is for them. But no, it's for me because I'm dumb. I cannot remember all the stuff that I have to say. If it's a four-day workshop or a two-day workshop, so I will cheat. I will check what I have to say next. And then I will say it, and then there will be another activity. Now guess what? When they fill out the feedback form, they will say that they really enjoy the activities and they wish there were more of them. I did not have a workshop when somebody did not complain that they wished there were more activities. I mean, my workshops are 60-70% activities, and still some people want more of them. So to develop these powers, it's simple. Buy a few books on interactive activities. Make sure that those activities are related to what you are teaching, and just do it.
Well, you know, that really illustrates the point that the audience are always in their own head thinking, what's in it for me? The experience of listening to you talk is always about them, not about you.
That's right. That's right. Excellent point. Excellent point. Because often people think, I have a great message and I want to go out there and spread it to the world. And the problem is, if you give your message to the wrong audience, people won't listen. When I go in to speak somewhere, I always want to find out, what are their problems? What are their challenges? And yes, I can share my message with this group, but I will share it in a way that I will address their challenges. For example, and I go off track here completely, but if somebody has cancer, and I'm talking about flu remedies or about ikebana, you know, flower arrangement, they don't care. They have cancer.
Right.
But if I come in and I speak about natural cures for cancer, wow, all the ears, antennas will go up, and yeah, I want to hear this. So it's very important to find out what are the problems of these people, what are their challenges. So I'm always sending out a pre-event questionnaire asking about the organization's challenges, if employees have certain challenges, if the management has certain challenges. Usually I speak separately to managers or employees, and then sometimes I have a mixed group, but usually I speak separately, so it's much easier that way. But I always find out, I have a long questionnaire that I send out, and I always say, you know, just answer the ones that you feel that they pertain to you. But that's the key, really, to reach upon the points that are relevant to your audience. And then with the interactive activities, you know, people don't like to sit for a whole hour and just listen to somebody speak. And we all have different delivery styles, and some people, especially in the beginning, they might be a little monotonous in their delivery. But if you provide lots of interactive activities, that raises the enjoyment level in the room and everybody relaxes more. Even you as a speaker relax more. And you will always see something funny when people work in groups. You break them up in groups. You go to the groups and you listen to them. And then you can notice something funny, make some little comments. By the time they finish the first group activity, you feel like you know the whole room. So it's much easier. You are much more comfortable in front of the whole group.
Right. Now, it sounds like from what you just said that the power of being able to read a room actually helps you with the power of humor.
Definitely. And I have two horror stories from the time I started. In the early 2000s, I spoke to a group of accountants and psychologists. Don't ask me how they got together. I don't know.
That does seem like an odd group.
Yes. And I already delivered a few speeches. I spoke already at a few conferences, and people always laughed when I spoke. They enjoyed my humor.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was, and this was a small group of about 15 people, and it was mostly a sales presentation, actually. And nobody was, I'm exaggerating a little bit when I say nobody was laughing and nobody was smiling, which is true, except one person. That person was laughing like crazy. I mean, she was loud, and she made fun of my accent a few times. She was laughing like, wah! I mean, it was, and everybody else was so serious. And it was a 90-minute presentation, and I just praying, God, please help me get through this. And you see, I was just rushing through it. I did not change my way of delivering, nothing. I just went through my plan as I planned it because I was a beginner and I didn't know how to do it. Yes, I was reading the audience, but I didn't know how to shift gears. I didn't know what to do to make them smile. All I had to do was slow down and ask them some questions, have an activity. No, I didn't have any of those. It was a straight 90-minute presentation. And I thought, God, please help me go through this. I'll be fine. I will never come back to this group. Finished the presentation. Many of them came up to me. They said, wow, this was great. It was really informational. And I left with more than $3,000 in orders. And one of them asked me if she could do her doctoral dissertation on the topic that I presented. It was on the different personality styles, the DISC behavioral model. She said it was really exciting, really informative, and she wanted my help to help her with her doctoral dissertation. And I was like, wow, why didn't you give me some signals that you enjoyed my presentation? I mean, I was going through so much agony. But I learned from that, and I had another similar delivery where nobody smiled, nobody laughed, and that right. was more than 50 people in that room. But what I learned was that some groups, for some reason, they will, maybe because the company culture or maybe there's somebody present that makes them self-conscious, they will control themselves. But it doesn't mean that they don't like you.
Right.
Like in the first example, you see, I walked away with a bunch of orders. One of the people became a lifetime customer. So it wasn't that they didn't like me. For some reason, they just kept that serious face. But again, if I had known what I learned later, I could have slowed down and involved them, and it would have been different. But I didn't know, so I just went through a 90-minute agony. I'm glad it wasn't a full-day workshop.
Well, you know, sometimes facial expressions can be misread, because I know sometimes when I'm really concentrating and engaged, I'll get a face that I've had people ask me if I was angry or sad, and I was neither of those things. I was just so focused on what I was listening to that I would get this really blank or serious look on my face. So it's possible they were just totally enraptured. And if you had maybe been paying attention to other aspects of their body language, maybe you would have picked up on that.
Well, there's a humongous irony to that story.
Okay.
I was talking to them about the four personality styles, how to recognize them, how to communicate with them. And I did not realize that I was speaking to mostly accountants who tend the personality style, who are usually kind of serious looking. They don't naturally let loose and just laugh freely. So I was not conscious about what I was teaching. I was in the beginning stages, and had I realized that, okay, I'm talking to mostly conscientiousness style people in this system, they are called that, then they are not naturally people who will just laugh freely. They are more controlled people. But I didn't realize it. But people are different personality styles. So some personality styles, they will laugh like crazy, and some, they will be very controlled and even suspicious. In the first couple of minutes or even an hour that they will listen to you, they will kind of look even angry, and they want to really see if you know what you're talking about, or is this some kind of scam, or are you a fraud, or whatever. Most people do not come to your presentation with that attitude, but some personality styles, they are more vicious. The main thing what I learned was that when I have an audience, be it 200 people or 20 people, and there are three who look angry or even fall asleep. I had people who fell asleep in my workshops.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially when you go to a conference and you speak for the second day or a third day, they party throughout the night.
Oh, yeah. It has nothing to do
day,
with you.
Oh, yeah. There will be people who will look really sleepy, and I had a few occasions where people fell asleep. But the key is not to be bothered by those, but deliver your presentation to those that are engaged. And through activities, you engage everybody. Also, you stop and you ask, what do you think? You ask for volunteers. For the first about 5 years, I always had a box of goodies with me. Calendars, pens, electronic calculators, all kind of stuff that I would ask volunteers, and I would give goodies to volunteers. Now, once they saw that the volunteers get gifts, when I asked for volunteers the second time, almost all the hands would go up. Now I don't carry any of those things around. I ask for volunteers, shut up. Somebody will volunteer. If rarely nobody does, I will point to somebody. And the key is to point to somebody who looks confident, who is smiling. Don't point at somebody who looks angry or sad. But yeah, I don't still give things away, but not for volunteering.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing not only your expertise and your tips and your advice, but also your stories, your experiences with us today on Public Speaking Superpowers.
You're very, very welcome. I really enjoyed it. I can speak about public speaking for 10 hours, uninterrupted. It's a passion of mine.
Well, this is the end of today's session of Public Speaking Superpowers. This is your host, Karma Spence, signing off.
Because this was recorded a few years back, I've cut the speaker's contact information from the recording because it may have been out of date. If you would like to learn more about today's speaker, go to publicspeakingsuperpowers.com/featured speakers and click on his picture. I'm working to keep the information there as fresh as possible.